Welcome to the Uncivilized Podcast. My name is Trevor Boehm and I will be your host. Every week or so, I try to get myself a fascinating human on the mic for you, someone who looks at the civilized world just like you do and says no thank you. Someone who wants to break some rules, to lead, and to bring their unique vision into the world. Someone for whom the status quo simply will not do. I hope you enjoy these conversations as much as I do. Please dive in. Hey folks, welcome back to the Uncivilized Podcast. This is Trevor Boehm, your host. And today's episode, let me just tell you, I am sitting in my partner's apartment in Denver and I decided to record this intro now. I usually batch a bunch of these recording or batch a bunch of the interviews and then go back and do the intros later when I have time. But I really wanted to speak to this one immediately because I'm still in the feeling of the interview, and it was so profound and so powerful and so beautiful and so moving, and want to share that with you up front. This is an interview with a woman named Melanie Bachman, who I didn't really know. I think I was following her on Instagram as a free diver and an ocean lover and a surfer a while back. And then I actually had to go back through our Instagram conversations. And she reached out to me in January of 2019 about a program I was doing with Courtney on sobriety. And we chatted a few times back and forth about that topic. And then that was it. And I noticed she had kind of disappeared off Instagram. And I remember thinking about her. True story. I was like, I wonder what she's up to. And then saw a post of hers, I think she had put up or someone else had put up, saying she had recently been diagnosed with breast cancer and was going through treatment. And I was shocked by this, you guys, because my memory of her, even just through social media, was of this like wildly vibrant woman. She was like a health nut and an ocean nut. Like this was not the quote, like person who ends up getting cancer. And she was young. She's 35 years old. And so when I saw that post, I just was taken aback by it and contacted her. And then for some reason it popped into my head, I really want to interview Melanie. One, I want to get her story out. She's such a light. Two, if there is any way that someone listening could help her, and if there was a way I could use my platform to be of service, I would. And at the end of this call, it's going to fuck you up. It fucked me up. When I asked what we can do as a community and as people listening to this, she says, just continue to live an amazing life. But I also want to add, I'm going to put her GoFundMe, which her friend's running, she's not running, in the show notes and ask if you are so inspired just to send something, because I know she's got a lot of medical bills and has some challenges here. Please do that for me. I'm not putting an ad to the nation in the middle of this. I'm not interrupting this. I'm not going to ask you to go buy my book or leave a thing on iTunes or anything like that. This is about Melanie Bachman, and this is about a relationship with life, a relationship with love, a relationship with death, and a journey of cancer. So, ladies and gentlemen, Melanie Bachman. Yes. Melanie Bachman, welcome to the Uncivilized Podcast. It is truly a pleasure to have you here. I have not known you for very long, but you've been in my world for some time. I don't remember what brought me to your page. I think it was just ocean stuff. Like, I was following all these people who were ocean-oriented, and then I think you disappeared for a little bit and came back and came back with a little bit of a story. So I'd love, before we dive into the depths, if you wouldn't mind sharing with my audience a little bit about you and who you are in the world.
Yeah, well, appreciate you having me. Love what you're doing with these podcasts and the inspiration you're sending through the ripple effect through the waves. It's awesome. And also to everyone listening, because just in listening and being mindful about these sort of topics, it's sending that ripple effect, and it's really inspiring. But yeah, my name is Melanie, and I am just a human being on this planet, really. I don't have any official titles, things like that. I really love diving deep in life. So whether that is physically in the ocean, I teach scuba diving, free diving, all of that fun stuff, or whether it's emotionally, spiritually, with community, I just love diving deep is my jam. And so the ocean has always called to me. I am a marine scientist by training.
Really?
So yeah. And that whole connection with the ocean and with the body, all of that is what is keeps me lit up.
Is that how you got into freediving? I'm fascinated by freediving. I have a bit of an ear issue after diving off of a bridge on spring break in my 20s in Mexico and bursting my eardrum, which was not the best thing to do in life. But yet still, I'm just fascinated by the idea as a scuba diver and a surfer. I'm like, wow, people can go down. Please tell me, how did you get involved in freediving?
Yeah. So freediving is just incredible. I feel there's this connection to the breath and the body, and then a different type of connection to the ocean that you experience, because you don't have a tank, you don't have a board, you're not down there. I mean, you're down there to look around, but you're also down there to connect with yourself. It's a lot of mindfulness and listening to your body. So you train on land a lot and also in the water and expand your lung capacity to take one big breath and dive deep into the ocean and, you know, look around there, whatever you want to do, come back up, have another breath and do it again. It's just exhilarating. It's an amazing experience. Would highly recommend it.
Yeah. Do you remember your first free dive?
Absolutely. More specifically, the magical moment that happens when you dive down and you can hear your heartbeat.
Oh, wow.
You can feel it in your throat. And then you look up and there's no bubbles. It's so quiet. Mm-hmm. And you can just stay down there, look around, and, you know, come back up. It's nothing short of magical.
Amazing. Yeah, I've done it a couple times and love the freedom of it. Right. Mm-hmm. I've also gone spearfishing a couple of times and loved the idea of, like, I'm not, you know, as a surfer, even a wetsuit was a challenge. Like surfing in California for 15 years and then going somewhere was like, oh my God, a pair of board shorts. This is it. I will never be trapped in a wetsuit again.
Yeah.
I imagine that scuba divers going into freediving feel pretty much the same way, huh?
Yeah, there's a lot of that as well. And we do get a lot of surfers and freediving that help you, you know, stay calm when you, you know, bite it from a wave or whatnot.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. And different types of environments spark different types of joy underwater as well. So diving in California with that cooler water in the kelp forest, whether you're diving in the cenotes in Mexico. Yeah, it's all good stuff. You definitely got to, we could get you back into it. Maybe those ears of it.
I moved to Colorado, which as a surfer was a challenge. I love it here. Yeah. I want to stay here and travel and do some other things. But I think I'm one of the few Coloradans with like three surfboards in my office. And people come in and see it and they're just like, what the hell are you doing? Like, well, you know, here's the problem. Living by the ocean is very expensive. And for the price of a 3-bedroom house on a 2-acre property, I'm paying what I paid for a studio in Santa Barbara, California, with access to the ocean that I didn't get to go to very often because I was working so damn much to afford the studio. So this is just a different way of living. When was the last time you were in the ocean, Mel?
So before treatment started, we gathered all the troops, you know, the mermaids, mermen, and we hightailed it down to Florida, and that was in April. Yeah. So I've had a bit of a dry spell. So just talking about it with you now is just, lighten me up because it's been a while. It's,
good. Yeah. And so since you brought it up, can we transition a bit into your current situation, let's call it your current temporary situation?
Absolutely. So like most people going about your life, having your plans and going through this business school, I was all stoked about creating this business and I had website ready to go live and products aligned and here I am. Oh, you know, my gut's telling me something's wrong. So I had a tumor I had felt about a year ago And multiple doctors had told me, you know, it's just a cyst. It's just a cyst. You're fine. You're overreacting. You're young. You're 35. You're not in the, no family history of cancer. Mm. So I let it go for a year. And then my gut started telling me something's going on. Went and got it checked out. Turns out I have cancer at 35, and not just any type of cancer, an aggressively spreading type of breast cancer called triple negative breast cancer. Mm. And yeah, it just kind of hits you like a redirection of life. And that's just how the mystery of life unfolds. It's the new journey. That's the path I'm on now. So
yeah.
Usually my summers are filled with diving and teaching diving and all of that fun stuff. And now, not to say I'm not finding fun in the darkness, but it is definitely a different type of summer I'm experiencing this year.
Yeah, I bet. Would you mind sharing with us can you walk us back to the doctor visit when you first heard it? Were you in shock? Were you in disbelief? Did it kind of feel like a knowing, since you said your gut had been informing you that something wasn't right?
Yeah, absolutely. It was almost a validation of sorts. Mm-hmm. I definitely remember that call, as I'm sure anybody who has a medical diagnosis like that experiences. I was even at work. I remember what I was doing and the hugs and the tears that were shed. But it was.
So you got a phone call. Was this a phone call while you were at work?
It was, yeah.
Holy shit. I had this image of you like in a doctor's office, you know, getting the news directly. Wow, a phone call. Okay, please carry on.
Yeah, so they had done the biopsy and, you know, so I was waiting these results, which were taking abnormally long. And so lots of patients, and anyone who's also been in this situation, you're on pins and needles, just stopping yourself from worrying, knowing there's nothing you can do. Whatever you're waiting to hear news about is already in your body. You're just getting affirmation of that, right? So that was weeks of waiting. And when the phone call came, I was at work. And it's funny because the breast surgeon who called me had such a cheery tone on her voice, like, "Hey, Mel, what's going on?" It was like, "Okay, this is good. This is good." And all I remember, she just said, "So it's cancer." And I had a little scribble note ready to take notes. And all I wrote was like, "It's cancer, period." And that was it. And, but it was, you know, they just wanted you to know. So you had the evening to think about it and come the next day with questions and start talking about the journey that's ahead.
Wow. God, it must be such a massive fork in the road. Like everything, I talk a lot to people who, and this is the way I say it or frame it, is everything that was true yesterday is no longer true today. Or so much of what was true yesterday is no longer true today. Like I'm so fascinated by those moments, not as a sadist, but just as a curiosity. And it feels like this is part of the human experience, as you said in the beginning, like I'm just a human and part of the human journey. Yet it's such a poignant one. It's such a potent one. Would you mind sharing a bit about what it was like to wake up the next day? Did you think like, oh, this was a dream? Or were you in any form of denial? Or was it just like, fuck it, I'm going for it. Like, I'm going to crush this thing.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll be straight up honest. First thing I did was, you know, I told my partner about it and went to the liquor store and got the nicest bottle of whiskey I could find. I sat on the back deck and the sun was setting. My girlfriend came over and I just sipped on some whiskey and was like, whoa, holy moly. Like, I don't know if you can swear on these things, but you know, those things were going through my mind and just disbelief. It was, you know, I say it was a validation. I already knew in my gut, but I felt like I was in a dream. Mm. I did not have the let's charge this, go at all. It was this very quiet, the stillness. And then the next day, it still feels that way, to be honest. It still feels like this dream or this path that was given to the wrong human. It's like, really? Even with my hair loss, I'm like, I look in the mirror, I'm like, wow, I'm amazed. I don't even recognize this body. It is dream state for me.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. First of all, good for you. I don't drink anymore. I haven't had a drink in about 6 years, but if I get diagnosed with cancer, I'm going to get in a fucking bottle of whiskey and just gonna go sit up in the woods and be like, well, you're here's some new adventures. Like, I think you just won the heart of all of my audience right there. I'm like, God bless this girl. It must be such a trip. It must actually feel, I remember in my divorce saying, I feel like I live 10 feet underwater. And that's, I'm just like swimming in this amorphous, like life is still going on, but I'm in this weird subset of life. Did you feel like the pause button had been hit, or did you feel like you'd been plucked out of one reality and dropped into another? Can you give us a little bit of a description of what you were going through?
Yeah, that's a little bit of both. It more like a pause. It's more of a slowing down. And my personality type and my kind of line of work, I'm very passionate and I'm driven and I work myself to death. And continually my body tells me, slow down, slow down, slow down. And I just was in a period of rest and had rearranged my life to work less and, you know, write more and work on this book and do all these things. And I thought I had been slowing down. And then the universe was like, oh, no, you haven't. Wait till you see this. And so it's almost like everything is in slow motion in a sense.
Yeah. And so then you obviously went back and worked with a doctor about a course of treatment. Can you share a little bit about what that process was like, more so than the outcome? Did you feel like you were in your body having a conversation about your body, or did you feel like you were perhaps talking about someone else and you were the guide?
Yeah, it's a whirlwind. I'm a very present person, but those 2 weeks, I can't tell you a whole lot about them other than you are just thrown into the fire. Mm. It is test after test after test after blood draw after, and you don't even have time to process anything. And you think you'd have time to research, oh, a second opinion, oh, I'm going to go do this. But when the doctors are looking you in the face and saying, there are no other options, I would tell this to my sister or my brother or anybody. You need to act now. And they tell you the severity of it. You don't have time to process. And that was a lesson for me, because I, as a writer, and I really love to, and you are as well, and I'm sure you enjoy that quiet time to process things and to reword them in your mind and, you know, just kind of dance with them for a bit. And there was no time for that. And I think that was the most challenging part, because it's just boom. None of that waiting on test stuff that they do when they're not sure. Once you have cancer, they go fast. And I was really impressed by how quickly everyone moved and treatment started.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Would you mind sharing a little bit about what the treatment protocol for you entails?
Sure. So I was allotted to go because of my tumor size and the stage of the tumor, which they take into account how the cells look, you know, how far along it is. Stage and grade are different. Side note, cancer brain. But so they decided chemotherapy was the first method of treatment for me. So chemotherapy followed by surgery, followed by radiation, followed by prophylactic surgery as well. The chemotherapy was what I was very hesitant about. I'm more of a holistic person. plant-based diet. You know, I teach health, fitness, yoga, all those things. And the thought of pumping poison in my body was just terrifying to me. And that was the biggest one that I'm still having a challenge with walking on that.
Yeah. A challenge that this is the only option, or a challenge that this is what's required of you to do to your body?
Yeah. Yeah. A challenge that you need to be sick before you're better.
Yeah, I don't play well in the Western medical model either as an acupuncturist. And yet there are times it feels like when you need a nuclear bomb, you go to the Western docs. The challenge is it blows up the whole neighborhood, right? And you're hoping that something's still standing at the end. What's been the most challenging part of this for you physically, if I may ask?
Chemotherapy, for sure. It's I'm the kind of woman who doesn't like to take medicine ever. My doctors know me as, oh, she'll do something else. And then I had scheduled appointments with natural doctors, and you know, it's the chemotherapy. I understand what it's doing as a scientist, and I respect the medicine and the people that, oh man, the people and all of the research that's been done, and it works. But the kind of sickness you get from chemotherapy is unlike anything I've ever experienced. And my writing brain tries to describe it to people like, oh, it's kind of like this. But the thing you can't describe is the endurance of the sickness. So today I'm just now starting to feel better, and it's been 9 days. Nine days. No. And you know, but then you get a short break and then you go through it again. So it's really been 2 months of this, of just the endurance of sickness. And I know there's a lot of people that have chronic illness and things like that. It just really humbles you to all of that, of what you're going through. And
yeah, I appreciate you sharing so honestly. You know, one of the reasons, one, I wanted to hear your story, to have you on, to help you spread the message of the story. Three, this is my most male dominated platform. Despite running a men's movement and having a men's book, social media and every other platform is female dominated. And yet I'm so curious, or I want men to hear your story for a number of reasons. One, to realize that there's a potential that this can happen with their partners. And two, to ask this question, which is, how has it been to be in partnership during this? And the secondary question will be, what kind of support do you need as someone going through this, especially as a woman? Because there are things I imagine, like right now you and I have the same haircut.
Yeah.
Mine is semi-optional as well. It's like, well, you know, like people are like, it's you choose. Well, I like choose to make the sides short.
Yeah.
We're very blessed to both have beautiful skulls.
Yeah.
You know, like you have a gorgeous skull, first of all.
Yeah, same to you.
Thanks. I've seen some skulls where I'm like, oh yeah, that hair loss wasn't that fun for you, huh? Would you mind sharing a bit about whatever you're comfortable with, obviously, about going through this in partnership and what you as a woman needed in partnership through this process?
Sure, absolutely. And I love what you're doing, and I'm so blown away that you had me on, I just have to say. For you to think of that for the men that are listening just gets me so excited that you guys are doing this, the work, and we're all doing the work, really. But in partnership, oh gosh, it's been amazing. I have an amazing partner, and he is so supportive. One thing, so kind of gearing back to your question about what you need from a partner in this, just love. A partner to accept you in all of it. There's a lot of changes happening to me physically, and I fully hold responsibility that if you don't feel sexy in your skin, you can't feel sexy for someone else. And it's been hard for me to feel sexy in my skin. And
yeah, I imagine.
Yeah. And so I'm, you know, getting there. And, but it still is, it's hard. And so he can feel that energy shift, you know? So having a partner that is able to hold his own energy and keep that strong in the midst of what probably feels like chaos in your partner's eyes, seeing me go through, be so sick, there's nothing they can do. You know, once they put the chemo in you, you're just waiting to see how sick you get. There's, you know, it's just like a waiting game. But to have a partner who is full of energy and light and able to kind of distract you from that physical pain you're in and bring the light back into your life and remind you that you are light. So that's been amazing to have someone like that. And to be honest too, though, it's not just your relationship partner, it's your partner with your community. And that's one thing that has surprised me is in previous unhealthy relationships that I've been in, I've relied solely on my partner for support.
Right, right.
But now that I'm walking a different stage in my life and I'm accepting help from a lot of people, it takes a village. It really, really does of support and just acknowledging that your partner can't be your only support when you're sick. And they need to respect that as well, because a lot of people will want to be that only support for you. And just recognizing, hey, someone else is going to do that today, or someone else is going to take her here today. And just being open to that, accepting of support from all angles for both partners.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think it's really important. I imagine for a lot of men specifically, the like swooping in hero archetype gets awakened of like, okay, cool. I'm going to do everything and make you my project and make fixing you my job and healing. And like, it's my responsibility to make sure you get through this. Okay. Which would be problematic for both of you.
Right.
Yeah. But I could see how easy that would come. Mel, would you mind sharing a bit of the conversation you had? Like, this must have been, I can't imagine sitting down in front of my partner and saying, I have cancer. Are you open to sharing a little bit about what that was like?
The moment we had been doing the dance of the tests. So he was aware we're waiting and we're meditating in the morning. We're staying grounded, staying as disconnected from the outcome as we could, riding the wave like surfers. He's a surfer too, my partner. So we're just riding that wave. When it came, when the news came, I just told him, I named my tumor Wilma. So, you know, it's like, you know, Wilma, she's cancer. And we just embraced and cried. There were no words. It just, and there wasn't a lot of sadness. It was more strength in the embrace and just look into each other's eyes and just like, okay, what's the next thing? You know, and this is it. I'm not going to wallow in my sickness. I'm not gonna feel sorry for myself. This is my journey. I have hereditary cancer. It's in my genes. There's nothing I did for this except exist on this planet. It's my dance. So yeah, it's it was almost bittersweet because we had an answer. You know, and now we can move forward instead of waiting and wondering and having so many people ask. But it wasn't anything. It was, again, peaceful. Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate you saying that. I think that's the duality of finally getting bad news, is that there's a relief of the wandering what if mind, the monkey mind finally goes, okay. Mm-hmm. All right, cool. This sucks. And now we have something we can actually grasp onto, as opposed to the addiction of possibilities or the endless sea of possibilities. Can you share a bit of perhaps some of, I'm going to try to formulate this question well, Can you share some of the directions that you felt yourself getting pulled into that you've had to stay grounded to not get pulled into, such as spiritual bypass, such as a deep depression, such as hopelessness? And then part two of that question is, what have you done to stay grounded? Yeah. How do you, look, I'm just going to be blunt, like look death in the eye and say, okay, I'm going to dance with you.
Yeah. So I was having a conversation just the other night about this. I'm generally I go into the darkness often, and I've been in the darkness most of my life. And it's funny because after that business class, my life purpose was the darkness or death card. And I was like, oh, a month later, you're diagnosed with cancer, right?
Wow. Would you mind just sharing a bit by saying most of your life has been in and around the darkness?
Yeah, I've grown up with emotional abuse, chronic PTSD from, long-term childhood abuse and some other life experiences, which hopefully one day you'll get to read about in my book if it gets done. But a lot of trauma and triggers from sexual abuse, emotional abuse, all sorts of things.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that.
Of course. And people see me as this bright light, but I really go deep into the dark. Mm. And even as a diver, I like it down there. I like it down deep in the dark because that's where the light shines most magical when you look up. And I really feel that's where we get our light from, is spending time in the dark. And so this journey has really taken me deeper than I've ever been. Mm. So yes, I have been deep in the dark and find myself in a lot of sadness, or just feeling stuck in a sense. So getting caught in the either physical body or the mental, in the intellectual body, right? So sometimes get overanalyzing and I'll just think, feel so, I'm such a scientist. So I'm like, oh, I feel that. And then you're analyzing how you're feeling. And then it's taking you in the mind game, right? Swirling in the mind space. So that's been some of the darkness I've experienced with this. Mm. And it's very hard to get out of that, especially when you're sick in bed and there's nothing else around.
Yeah.
And there's no light inside and you're not feeling better and the sun hurts and everything hurts. And but ways I've stayed grounded have been, honestly, community has come, stepped up and just keep showing up in my life at divine timing when I need it. Random texts, random gifts, acts of kindness in the mail, thanks to you, and things like that. There is just, that will help bring me back, get me out of my space. My breath has been an integral part. I work a lot with the breath, and it's been challenging with chemotherapy to utilize the breath as I'm used to. Hmm. Because it moves the organs and your body's sore and your bones are sore and your lungs are sore. So finding new ways to utilize breath has helped. And honestly, meditation in the morning, keeping that, the daily practice of showing up, shutting down your eyes and just connecting with the spirit, divine, whatever you believe in, that's integral for me.
Hmm. Thank you. Where do you get your resilience from? If I have a cold for like 2 days, I tell every partner, like, I don't do sick well, just so you know. So on day two of a cold, you will see a 190-pound grown man throw a 3-year-old's tantrum. Like, I'll lie on the floor in the supermarket and be like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm dying. I'm clearly dying. They're like, you have sniffles.
Yeah.
You don't understand me. Where do you draw your resilience from? Just this idea of 9 days of hell, 2 days of okay, and then you're back on the wagon. What are you drawing upon, if I can ask? Is it a connection to the divine? Is it your heart? Is it just, fuck you, I'm not going to go down with this? A mix of all of it?
Yeah, it's, I surprised myself, to be honest. It's the thread. It's the thread of community. It's the thread that attaches us to environment, the oneness, the divine, the purpose. My whole life, I've always been fascinated by why are we here? And I always have this desire for something more, something extraordinary. And I just have such a hard time being planted on this earth, this moving rock. I feel like I'm just this starseed that's been misplaced, right? So that's what keeps me going. Reading beautiful books, art, those sparks of the divine in the beauty of our world, the sounds of nature, just going out and listening, even that's enough to make me just continue another minute. Sometimes it's minute by minute with this stuff. And yeah, I'm surprised by how people do this. And, you know, people older, people more sick physically, I'm blown away. And I really am finding hope and purpose that there is a reason I'm seeing this, being such, you know, an analytical absorber of the world before I kind of creatively regurgitate it. I feel like I'm just the sponge and I'm just sitting and I'm absorbing everything so that I can somehow help someone or connect with someone or spark a light or inspire. And that's what keeps me going.
So beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. It's a wild trip, huh? I volunteered for a year in hospice and just to be around people who were so honest and so vulnerable and so open to this day fucks me up. Like when people ask, when I get interviewed and ask about hospice, I'm like, okay, just so you know, I'm gonna start crying. I hope you're ready for this. And it's oh wow, this is real. This is true. This is actually what matters. Like that, whatever the quality of that substance or quality of that feeling of, wow, this is real. I think we are so devoid of it. So just to have you say what you said is so moving and so emotional because you had no choice in it, but wow, you're dealing with what's real, aren't you? And so many people we're social media whores. We're just out there eating junk food and having junk food human experiences. So while I wouldn't wish what you're going through on anyone, I can see the blessing in it for you and bless you for wanting to share it with people. Right? We don't talk about this shit, Mel. And I'm going to transition, if you're okay, into we don't talk about death. I imagine you've had to do some real, like, honest to God confrontation with, or perhaps that's not the right word, confronting of transitioning or, you know, going to the other side. Would you mind sharing a little bit about some of the process you've had to work through or have been worked through around that?
Yeah, that's awesome. And I'm so with you. We don't talk enough about death and we don't talk enough about, you know, you don't want to wallow in cancer and sickness, but you know, I just want to shout to everybody, cancer is the pandemic, y'all. It is crazy how many people have cancer and nobody's talking about it. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, I became a marine scientist to help our environment. And it feels like I don't know how all this cancer came, but I'm going to go in a wormhole. I'm going to just sideswipe that for a moment. Okay. Back on track, but no one's talking about, death. And I'm with you. I'm really drawn to death. It's part of the darkness, the death and rebirth, death and rebirth. And, you know, we're all going through this stuff. all of us, every single human being is going through this stuff. And it's scary when you feel so alone in it. And then you get caught in your mind. And that's when it gets, you know, death can be such a beautiful thing. It's the veil is thinnest between you and the divine in the death. And it's an opportunity. It's a closing of a door and an opening of a door. And I know that's said so many times, so many cliche ways, but it really is. And I look at it as an opportunity. I look at it as change. You know, the only constant in life is change, and death is change. People are afraid of change. But to be honest, there are times when I crave the peace of death. I'll be straight up honest. Yeah. Life is hard. We are going through stuff, divorce and emotional traumas, and, you know, just life is tough. And sometimes that death and the peace of death, you're just like, ooh, that sounds so sweet. It's like a nap, right? But then you're rebirthed, and then you come back more vibrant, and you've learned more. But yeah, you can go ahead and tee up death the beautiful way you do with, but I am like stuck. I'm just really excited about it when you bring it up, actually.
Yeah. Was it something that, and this may sound clinical, but I don't mean the question to be clinical. Was it something then that you studied as a scientist? Like, oh, let me read some books about death. Let me watch some YouTube videos about people who have had near-death experiences. Did your brain, like the brain kick on and go, oh, I want to learn more about this? Or was it more of a felt sense of, oh, wow, I need to feel into this more? How was that process for you?
Really, I haven't read much about death other than really enjoying the OA on Netflix. If you haven't seen that, I love that show. But, you know, for me, it's been more of an acceptance of death. It's been, we're all going to die. It's the one thing we all have in common, right? And we've all died. It depends on your belief, but in my world, I believe we've died multiple times, and we're just energy recirculating, coming back as different forms or whatnot. But this whole journey of cancer is, to me, I thought I had accepted death. I wasn't afraid to die. At times I would prefer death over some emotional situations and, you know, ended up working through that on multiple times. But this acceptance that we are not this body, and this acceptance of death is real. And it's like a layer, you know, like everything in life, it's like an onion where you're peeling off layers and you're getting deeper into it. And there's just this, I'm still working through some of that, to be completely honest, because you're going through this complete death and rebirth of cells, and you're feeling your body die with chemotherapy. Like you literally are feeling, I could feel when my hair was dying, my scalp turned on fire, and you just saw all the hair follicles drop. Wow. And you're like, oh, it's not even my hair anymore.
Right.
It's like a complete, like, whoa.
Yeah.
And you are not this body. You are the soul, right? You are just a soul in a body. And then you have the whole acceptance of death post cancer treatment. Oh, these long-term effects of all these drugs, blah, 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 blah. So it's just the spiraling of acceptance and learning to find peace that it could happen at any time. You know, cancer could kill me. COVID could kill me. Walking down the street could kill me. I could die spontaneously talking to you. You know, it's just the only real thing.
Ironic.
I know. Well, yeah, I love death. Boom.
You're like, holy shit, I can't believe this just happened.
Yeah. But
yeah, it's a cultural phenomenon, I think, here in the West, that we don't talk about it at all. And we tuck it away, we put it in nursing homes, we distance ourselves from it. And yet you said it is no different than if we didn't talk about eating, or going to the bathroom, or sleeping at night. It's so integral to the human experience and yet so scary. You know, I tell people, everyone I work with, I'm like, you know, the reason why you don't want to do this thing that you said you want to do, write your blog, write the book, because you're afraid of death. And they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm like, somewhere down the line, it's in there. And you also have forgotten that at some point you're going to die and you won't be here anymore. And none of this shit will matter anyway. So it's this weird dichotomy, I think, or duality that we live with here in the West. Is it something that for people around you, it sounds like you have an extraordinary community, God bless them. Mm-hmm. And I'm also curious if you've had to experience people not knowing how to handle this or how to engage with you. I think this is one of the reasons, again, I wanted to have you come on and speak to specifically to men of what does the guy do who has someone close to him that's going through this and goes, I don't even know where to fucking begin. So I'm just going to ignore her or I'm just going to ignore him. What is one of the more helpful ways to engage with someone who's going through a process like yours?
Okay. So can you repeat the first question? I was like getting jazzed up on it. And then I started getting sidetracked by what you were saying. Like, oh yeah, I could talk about that too.
I think I'm curious just how have people engaged with you, given that this is a really unique situation? And what is the most holistically helpful? So is it just, let's be real. I remember again, and I'm not saying divorce and cancer are the same thing, but I remember walking into my business when it was public that I was getting divorced and I watched people look at me and then look at the floor. Mm. And I had one friend who I met up with in New York, a bunch of us were out together, and he just walked right up and was like, hey man, I'm really sorry to hear about your separation and divorce. That must suck. And I went, oh fuck. Thank you. Like the one guy who was like, it's out on there. You see it right there. It's on the table. And I'm going to acknowledge that I see it on the table. And you see me seeing it on the table. And now you can relax. I was like, yeah, I love you. Thank you so much. I guess those are my questions. How have people engaged with you that has been helpful and what, not advice, but, if you can share a holistically helpful way to be in relationship with someone who's going through what you're going through.
Yeah, absolutely. So especially not everyone loses their hair with cancer, but if you do, like I have, that's definitely a walk-in billboard right there, right? You're just, and I haven't gotten into the wig wearing, you know, I'm like, yeah, it kind of feels, I'm not going to be bald much in my life. I'm enjoying the feels of it. I don't know about you, but it's like, you know, making me more streamlined as a diver, get a little bit of, you know, a little faster heat coming now. Off. Yeah, you're faster. But I have had those looks and they've been nothing short of what I have expected. You have some of the people that look at you and are like, what? Yeah. You know, give you the double take.
Yeah.
When they see how my age, I've had family and friends has been, you know, I have a great community here of support. I've spent a lot of my life, you know, honing in the few that are like really amazing, you know, just getting that core group together. But those that are a little bit outside of that, you really see them be fearful and push you away. And they just, it's almost too much for them to handle. Mm-hmm. And you're no longer a friend. I've had a lot of people just whoop, not talk to me, not even acknowledge, which is totally fine because my circle's small and tight and that's all I need. I like my bubble. But I don't really give it much thought, to be honest. I'm not thinking, oh, what are they thinking? Or they must obviously be wondering if I'm sick. I just don't give it any thought. I give it no attention or energy. I'm just holding on to myself, feeling confident in my skin. And if this is how the world's going to take me, this is how the world's going to take me. You know, I choose not to be fearful of the death portion of this. Mm-hmm. And it's not even talked about. My partner and I have never talked about it. Well, we'll talk briefly about it, but we don't give it the energy to thrive. And we both also acknowledge any way we could die any time doing anything. So it's doesn't matter if it's cancer, it doesn't matter if it's the flu. And that's not the part that's challenging for me during all of this. So it's just more of the sickness that's more of the challenge. But everyone's different, you know. I think as support for partners supporting each other going through something like this in a health situation, just positivity, you know, just be the light. Just your partner's going through enough darkness, lifting up spirits, be the light, remind them why they're alive. And that's been, you know, something so small. I had a massage by this amazing healer and I left that massage and I told her, you just reminded me through your touch why I'm alive, and things like that, you know. Let that be the reminder. And we'll never fully accept death. We're human, you know. It's one of those things you can wish for as a perfectionist, you know, it's what I do often, but we just can't attain that as a human. It's we'd be vapor by then, you know? So it's the dance. And then just giving yourself grace that you won't fully accept, but maybe tomorrow you could be a little less fearful. Maybe you can look somebody that is sitting so close to that door and give them a smile. And that is what they hold on to all day, because those things are what matter. You know, a smile or just that energy exchange is what matters. And especially to someone that is so close and dancing alongside this death. It's those little moments and just so much stillness for them. So those little moments are magnified.
It's beautiful. Yeah, I remember early on in hospice asking one of the guys, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to read to you? Do you want me to play cards with you? Do you want me to like pull out a puzzle? Like, what do you want me to do? And he said, I just want you to sit here and be with me. And I'll be honest, that fucked me up because I'm a doer. I was like, well, how can this be that this is valuable to you or so valuable to you that it would be the number one choice given all the other choices you have in this situation? So thank you for sharing that. This is a potentially not loaded question, but I want to ask it because I want you to be able to use this platform as well, because you've given so much to us. What do you need? What can we, as my audience, who are the fucking elite, what do you need, Mal? How can we support you? Even if it's just send me a prayer or keep me in your thoughts, or if it's I need toilet paper, I need like rice. Like, what do you need, and how can we help?
I appreciate you asking, and I appreciate this. I've never been on a podcast before.
Get out.
I appreciate
this. This is your first podcast?
It certainly is. Yeah.
Well, it's all downhill from here. Like, this is the best one there is. I had no idea.
Yeah. You know, and I had a feeling you would ask this, and I've been thinking about it, and I honestly, I have everything I need. I'm just so grateful to be on this platform speaking. And if this touches one person, that's what I needed. I just needed a little connection. So if this resonates with somebody or doesn't, that's fine too. But if it can just spark a little light in somebody to make them feel a little less alone, or to spread a little light to somebody else in a ripple effect, that is everything for me. And that's my life's purpose. So that in itself, and just keep being badasses, keep doing, I mean, just, it's so humbling to see men, you know. I love what you're doing in this movement and encouraging wilding, like staying wild and just uncivilized and just breaking of the norms and shattering of all that crap and BS. And that is what this world needs, are people doing the dance. And what they are, all your team is doing is awesome. And that's serving our world. And I just hope that continues.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If people want to follow you or follow this journey or connect with you, what's the best place and where can they do that? And if that's like a, I just want to be in my little circle and do my thing, that's okay as well too.
No, awesome. If anyone feels led, I have Instagram, I'm salty_soulshine. Woo. And yeah, I've been mindfully showing snippets of my journey, but I'll be honest, there are times when I'm just too darn sick. So it's highs and lows. But if it lights you up, you can do that. Maybe one day when I have a book, it'll be up there. So
oh yeah,
hopefully sooner rather than later. But yeah, but you can give me a follow. You can, if it inspires you. If not, no worries. Just yeah, keep being real.
Thank you. I mean that. Thank you for coming on and sharing your story. And I was drawn to the light you were years ago. And it's still shining through you. So on behalf of myself and everybody listening to this, bless you and thank you. And I look forward to having you back on when this is all behind you and you're just promoting a book, deep diving and crushing shit. So thank you again.
Awesome. Cheers. Thank you, Trevor. Appreciate you.
This is Trevor Bohm signing off on another episode of the Uncivilized Podcast. If you enjoyed this, please give us a share. Give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. And if you're interested in getting a hold of my book, Man Uncivilized, whether you're a man or a woman, please go to www.manuncivilized.com/the book and get readin'.